I hope you guys can hear me again now. That was a temporal glitch. Fantastic.
Yes.
So thank you everybody for who read. Thank you, Jay, for posting those in extremis like that. We do have a speaker this evening who's just travelled an awfully long way, and I'm gonna actually leave it to Jay to introduce him to you this evening. So Jay, over to you.
I'm an addict. My name is Jerry.
Hello, Jay.
Hello, Jay. Hey, Jay.
I met this individual, I guess back in 1983, thereabouts. We were doing service at the regional level. I got to know him on a regional basis and then worked with him when the World Convention, or not the World Convention, but our Florida convention came to Orlando. And I wound up being the program chair, and he was there a lot of the time. I mean, we've run into each other over the years. He's got a interesting story to tell because I've been able to watch it. I have watched him grow as an individual. He has helped me, even though sometimes he doesn't know it. We've had conversations about lots of things. And we don't always see eye to eye, which is all right. You don't have to see eye to eye all the time. I respect his recovery greatly. And we both had the same sponsor until he was no longer. And without further ado, Biff, would you share with us?
Thank you, Jay. Yeah, I'm an addict. My name is Biff.
Hi,
Hi,
Biff.
Biff.
Welcome.
Hi, Biff.
I'm
Hi,
Clubman.
Doug.
Well, thank you so much for asking me. My home group is Recovery Matters. It meets Tuesday night at 8 o'clock in the Greater Orlando Area Park. My clean date is September 26, 1980. This October, when I turn 78, I will have been clean half of my natural life. And it's a long, strange trip it's been. I was almost 39 when I got clean. I had convinced myself, the way I think we all do, that if the world would just do it my way, I wouldn't have a problem. Unfortunately, the world, or fortunately for me, the world was smarter than I was and was not about to do it my way. I got into recovery by way of what in those days was a rare thing called an intervention, which is, of course, very common now. I then went into a treatment program, which was a 4-week treatment program, and they kept me there for 8 weeks. And then they sent me to a halfway house for recovering physicians. I'm a podiatric physician, and this halfway house wasn't really equipped for us, but I was getting kind of used to that. They weren't equipped for Narcotics Anonymous either. They were very strongly AA based. But I have to admit that the treatment program I went through and the halfway house, which was a 3-month gig, both of them were very clear on they were not recovery, they were a pathway to recovery, and that the only recovery that was going to be available to me on any long-term basis was going to be through the 12 steps. When I got into the halfway house program, it was in Atlanta, and there were NA meetings in Atlanta at that point. As part of the halfway house program, we had to go to 3 outside meetings a week, and NA did not count. You could go, but you still had to go to 3 other Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. Now, in all fairness, back in 1980 on the East Coast of the United States, there was not very strong recovery in Narcotics Anonymous yet. but there were people staying clean. I'm a typical addict, so if you told me I wasn't supposed to do something, I needed to go there to find out why I wasn't supposed to do it. My first meeting was at something that's become a folk classic. It was called the Rising Sun Clubhouse in Marietta, Georgia. And it was falling down in 1980. I think it's probably fallen down by now. But it was a big old frame building, which was already starting to lean. There was a big porch in the front. I went there with a couple of other docs that were in this treatment halfway house program. And they were your typical doctor. They were wearing, you know, very doctory looking clothes, Basquiat shoes and very creased khakis and button-down shirts and looking anything and all the part of a doc. And I'm wearing jeans and cowboy boots and t-shirts. So we get to this meeting, and the whole front lawn of the clubhouse is completely filled with motorcycles. And there's all these guys with leathers on the front porch. Now, understand, I have not been to an NA meeting. And these guys come running off the front porch in their leathers. One of them was a guy that played one of the badass bikers in all of the Clint Eastwood movies. And grabbed us in bear hugs and swung us around, and I was scared to death. And I had no idea, you know, about hugging at meetings. I had only been to AA where everybody shook hands. And certainly had no idea what the motives of these guys were. But we went into the meeting, and I'd say at least I was a little bit frightened. So I was very quiet, which those of you who know me now know that's not like me. And kind of sat there and faded into the woodwork as best I could. But I heard and felt things that I had not felt until that point. And one of the things I heard was, don't use no matter what. If your ass falls off, pick it up and take it to a meeting. Keep coming back. And those were kind of things I had not ever heard. And the people there looked like they were having a good time. They made me feel welcome. I really wanted to keep coming back. And that was my initial exposure to Narcotics Anonymous. I then went from there to a small town in the panhandle of Florida that's the capital of the state, called Tallahassee. Of course, there were no NA meetings there at the time. Not that I would have gone if there were, because I was bound and determined to do it my way, which meant that I didn't need meetings. So for my next 3 months, I was about as miserable as you could be, and still to this day know that the only reason I didn't use was through the grace of a higher power. I talked to the people I had gone through recovery with through the treatment programs, and they kept telling me I needed to go to meetings, I needed to go to meetings, go to meetings. So eventually I surrendered and I went to a meeting, and I got there late. I sat in the back of the room and I left early, and surprisingly enough, I didn't feel much better. And that pattern continued for about a week. And then I was getting ready to leave early, and this guy stood in the doorway and he said, "Where are you going?" And I said, "Well, I got to go." Now, I wasn't working. I was on disability at the time, so I had nowhere to go. And eventually, this guy convinced me that I was going to go to coffee with these guys. And that was truly the beginning of my recovery. And I was one of those people that felt very welcome in AA being an addict. But did not feel like I was the same as they were. And that was through no fault of their own. It's because I wasn't the same as they were. And I couldn't continue to think drugs when they said alcohol, and think recovery when they said sobriety, and feel comfortable about it. However, it was the only game in town, and that game was better than no game. So probably about 6 months in, I was starting to feel real comfortable at these meetings, and I got a job offer in Orlando and decided to take it and realized that I was really, really afraid of leaving this support group that I had. And I shared that at one of the meetings, and somebody told me, well, if I didn't like it in Orlando, I could always come back. And that was a new concept to me. I didn't realize that I had a choice. And that gave me a great deal of comfort. Now, you would think I had learned a lesson, but when I got to Orlando, I started by going to a couple of meetings, but then we were opening a new office, and we had a lot of stuff to do, and it kept looking up, and it was after noon, or it was after 8 o'clock, and then there weren't any meetings to go to, and there were no NA meetings, yada, yada, yada. So I was pretty miserable again for another 3 months. And then started to go to an AA meeting, and I went to this meeting and walked in the door and stood in the middle of the room and probably could have done anything I wanted to and nobody would have noticed. It was like, well, screw that crap. I'm not going back there. And then somebody suggested I go to a young people's meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, I was pretty close to 40 years old at that point, but I think emotionally I definitely belonged at a young people's meeting. So I went to this meeting called Young and Free. And when I got there, this guy hugged me at the door, which was very strange for an AA meeting, young or old. And then he whispered in my ear, "Look, you look like you need to go to the back room." And it's like, what the hell's going on here? But I went to the back room. And the back room was kind of filled with us. And this guy leaned over and said to me, "You want to go to an NA meeting?" And I said to him, "Sure, is there a secret password I need to have or something like that?" And he said, "Well, no, not really." And we went to this first NA meeting that I went to in Orlando. And it was an H&I meeting, and it was being run by a Young People's Treatment Center. I don't think it was any way, shape, or form connected to NA in Florida or anywhere else, but they did have NA literature and it did have an NA format. And the only thing was, is it ended up being almost group therapy with the two professionals there pretty much dominating and running the meeting. But it was an NA meeting and it felt like an NA meeting. And out of that, there were three of us that went to that meeting, and we decided that we were going to try to find NA. We heard that there was NA in South Florida, and one of the guys went down to Miami because he wasn't working. He found meetings, he found literature, he came back, and we started having NA meetings. Started having NA meetings, and this guy who wasn't working would run around all over town and find out where we could have a meeting, and then he would commit us to being there, and then the three of us would sit down and pick a name for this meeting, pick a format for the meeting, pick the time for the meeting, and the three of us pretty much were Narcotics Anonymous in Orlando. And then we heard about something that was going on in Daytona Beach, not too far away, called a regional meeting. And we heard that there were going to be women there. And so we were bound and determined to show up. And although our motives weren't really all that clear, we were where we needed to be. And we showed up at that meeting, and there were people there, and there were women there, but they were there with their significant others. But we got what we needed. We got welcomed into the Florida Regional Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. And at the regional meeting the following day, the chairperson of the region said who's here that wasn't here at the last meeting? And we raised our hand. He said, where are you from? We said, we're from Orlando. And the three of us became the Greater Orlando Area of Narcotics Anonymous. It was kind of scary that two out of three of us was group conscience, but that's just the way it was in the beginning. And we received a tremendous amount of support from the people down south who would come up and help us run meetings the way they needed to be run, and showed us a lot about how to. And we became very, very involved. All three of us became very involved in the Florida region. In the beginning for me, I was definitely involved with service-based recovery instead of recovery-based service. And it kept me clean, but at a very high price. And so I found myself married after having 3 years clean and following my obsession with a woman I had met from Atlanta and ignoring any advice I might have gotten from anybody. And we got married, and it was, we met, or we actually hooked up at the World Convention in New York, WIC the 13, and it was all very dramatic and romantic, and everybody participated in our relationship. And 2 years later at DC, the relationship fell apart in front of the whole fellowship that helped put it back, put it together in the first place. And we weren't very neat. We were very sloppy in the way it fell apart. She had decided to have an affair with one of my sponsees. The only thing I can tell you positive about that is I was able to ask the women in Orlando to continue to support her, that my sponsor and the people that I had gotten to know in the region were extraordinarily supportive of me, and that I didn't use and I didn't act out and I didn't extract revenge and vengeance. And on the other side of that, I came out with a better understanding of how important I was, the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. Basically, I was at the World Convention in D.C., WIC the 15, and this whole thing went down, and I was literally a blithering idiot. Couldn't really put two words together or stop from crying at all times. And the guys in the fellowship were there for me, and they held me up and kept me going. And it was an amazing thing that they did for me. But I do remember being told that I did a pretty decent four-step workshop, which I didn't even remember participating in, but I moderated. I shared that, and I don't remember. But what was strongest part for me was the men in Narcotics Anonymous holding me up when I couldn't stand up on my own 2 feet and kept me going and helped me put one foot in front of another, and they never left me alone until they were sure I was safe. And as a matter of fact, my grand sponsor made me check out of my room and check into his room so he could keep an eye on me through the whole convention. I got back to Orlando, and we don't do mommy and daddy splitting up real well, so it was pretty testy for a while. But eventually we came out on the other side. I stayed very involved in service, which at that point kind of kept me clean a little bit longer and kept me going and kept me motivated. I was fortunate enough to be elected as the RSR, which we now call RDs, from the Florida region, which is also a position that Jay held in those days, I think one or two times after me. And I went from being the RSR from the Florida region to being the World Public Information the World Public Information Committee Vice Chair. Except I had never done any public information in Narcotics Anonymous. I had been the Vice Chair of the World Finance Committee, but we didn't see a need for a World Finance Committee, so the Finance Committee put in a motion in those days to disband the committee and let the admin body. And so I thought I was going to get to go home. And my sponsor, who was my sponsor for about 3 years at that point, and was my sponsor until he passed away this past year, said to me, "No, you're not going home. They need you in PI." And so I went into the PI meeting, because in those days, if your sponsor said go to PI, you went to PI. If your sponsor said go to H&I, you went to H&I. If you said stand in a corner with one leg up, you stood in the corner with one leg up. And so I went to PI, and they said to me, "Well, we would really like to make you the PI chair based on all the experience you've had in your profession with public relations and everything. But we have a policy that the PI chair has to have served on the World PI Committee for at least a year." I said, "Well, you know, that kind of makes a lot of sense." So they said, "But there's no such proviso for the vice chair." So they elected me vice chair, and the chairperson was in the U.S. Navy, and he was a commander, and they shipped him off to Okinawa. And in those days, we didn't have the technology we have now, so he could no longer maintain his position. And I then became the de facto chair of World PI with about 2 months experience at PI on a world level. But the staff of NA, NAWS staff, was just amazing in those days. They had me come out there almost every weekend, and the staff gave up their own time on the whole weekend, teach me everything I needed to know to become an effective PI chair. And I was blessed to have a phenomenal PI committee, and I did maintain the chairmanship for the next 2.5, almost 3 years. And we were very proud to have started the PSAs and to do multi-regional learning days. We had the first multi-regional learning day in Illinois. And things just were unbelievable. And the problem was, is I was going 120 miles an hour, both within my profession and with Narcotics Anonymous. And my marriage had fallen apart, and it was all kind of happening at the same time. And so by the time my 3-year stint was up, I was completely burned out. And I had been nominated for the World Board of Trustees at that time, and I didn't decline the nomination, but we needed a 75% vote, and I wouldn't even vote for myself, and I was told I lost by that one vote. So I'm grateful that I didn't try to push the envelope any further, got to go home, and got to start to work on me. And I did learned one thing, and that was that I knew nothing at all about how to have a successful relationship in Narcotics Anonymous, or in life for that matter, and that the common denominator in all of my failed relationships was me, and that maybe what I needed to do was start to work on me, be able to become more viable for a relationship. I'm not saying that was a lesson that I learned simply and easily and just by being analytical and looking at the situations. I didn't learn it by writing. I didn't learn it by doing 4 steps in relationships. I learned it through pain and suffering. And I had 18 years clean, and I blew out a couple of discs in my back, and I could no longer practice. So I had to sell my practice to one of my partners. And for not nearly what it was worth. And I had to readjust my lifestyle to a significant income change and didn't know how to do it. And so at about 18, 19 years clean, I had to file for bankruptcy and was significantly in debt and was absolutely furiously pissed off at God. And told him so in many different terms, and cursed at him and screamed at him and told him that this really sucked, that all I did was the next right thing. I was always there for the still suffering addict. And how could he do this to me after all this time? I didn't have a job. I didn't have a service commitment. I didn't have any money. I didn't have a relationship. How dare he? And somewhere along the line, a voice came to me, which is my spiritual awakening and probably the most significant one I've ever had. And it said to me, "You arrogant asshole. Who do you think you are? Get down on your knees and ask your God what you can do for him instead of telling him what he needs to do for you. And let's see what happens with that." So I did that. I got on my knees and I told him I was scared and I was scattered and I was arrogant and how could I be of service to him? But as usual, I didn't know when to stop or keep my mouth shut. And I said, "Besides, I'm having trouble focusing and I would really appreciate if you could help me get focused." Well, we were told in Narcotics Anonymous, my whole recovery, don't pray for an elephant unless you have a cage big enough to put it in. And I would say within the next 6 or 7 months, I came back from Washington, D.C., where I was working as a congressional science fellow, and came back to Orlando and was having a lot of trouble breathing after I was back here for a week or two. Eventually ended up at a doctor's office, had a low blood count, ended up going to the hospital, and was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. And I absolutely had no trouble focusing then. The good news was is that I knew that I had cancer before I got to the emergency room. And what I did was pray for two things. I prayed not to be arrogant because I was scared. And if these people wanted to help me, to let them help me. And I also prayed for a guardian angel in case there happened to be one that was available to me. It would be greatly appreciated. And my sponsees got me to the emergency room on a Saturday morning. And believe it or not, on a Saturday morning in Florida, there was no one in the emergency room, which is unheard of. And this nurse came out and she took my hand and she said to me, "You look like shit." I said, "Well, that's how I feel." She said, "Well, I guess I'll hold on to your hand and just walk you through the rest of what we're going to go through." And I said, "Well, that's pretty fantastic, you know, that he's already sent me a guardian angel and I didn't even have to. You know, wow, unbelievable." And they went through a whole series of tests and everything else. And the doctor came in, the emergency room doc, and he said to me, "Do you want these people to leave?" And I said, "No." I said, "There's nothing you can say to me that they can't hear." And he said to me, "Well, you have cancer and it looks pretty severe. And we're going to have to admit you." He said, "But it just so happens that there is an oncologist in the emergency room right now. Would you like to see him?" And I said, "Sure, of course." And this guy walked in the door and I was blown away. I mean, I could just feel that he was my guardian angel. I could see God all through him. And so I started to cry, you know, and he said to me, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Well, I prayed all night for a guardian angel, and here you are." And he turned around and walked out of the room. And I went, "Oh, I blew that one." And he came back 5 minutes later, and I said, "Well, where'd you go?" He said, "Well, you were praying all night. You could give me 5 minutes." And he said to me, "You're real sick. We don't know exactly what it is, but it's over about 95% of your body." He said, "If there's any chance at all, I'm going to have to kill you in order to save you." And I said, "Well, bring it on." And he said, "Well, I'm giving you a 10% chance of making it through the first round." And I started to smile. And he said, "What are you smiling at?" And I said, "Well, Doc, I'm in recovery. And 19 years ago, they gave me a 10% chance of staying clean." And I said, so I like 10% chance. And he said, well, this is going to be really, really interesting. And they admitted me. And by the time I got from the emergency room to my room, you guys were already there. Now, I didn't call anybody. I don't know how anybody knew, but there were two addicts waiting for me to be checked into my room, sitting in the room. And I was in the hospital for 6 weeks the first time. And during that entire 6 weeks, I was not alone for 2 minutes. One of you guys was in that room at all times. And then I went through a long course of chemotherapy, a bone marrow transplant, and all that stuff. And obviously, I'm one of those 10%. And I truly believe what saved my life was three things: the power of love, the power of prayer, and the power of Narcotics Anonymous. I truly believe that if it weren't for all three of those things and the guardian angel that was sent to me, I would have ended right there and then. But there were other plans for me, and I was able to get back on my feet, and I learned several lessons while I was in the hospital and unemployable and all that stuff for a year. And I learned things like how important people were and how unimportant things were. And then I started to feel better, and I started to forget quickly what I had learned. And the old money, property, prestige started to make some headway. Fortunately for me, I was much more self-aware after spending that much time in the hospital and having an opportunity to learn. And I was able to start to work some steps on that. And I have reached the point where I have pretty much given up on relationships, given up on almost anything else that had anything to do with anything positive, and was just grateful to be alive. And then after some circuitous things, which are not all that important other than they were physically draining, I was given an opportunity to go back into the profession that I had chosen. And given that second chance, I really liked it a whole lot better coming back than I had the first time, and consider myself truly blessed to be able to be of service to people on a physically helpful basis. To help people to feel better, which helps me to feel better, and to do something that I really enjoy, and to continue to be able to do it at this tender age, are all blessings from a power greater than I am, and as a result of my recovery. I also started doing some work on my spirituality, and I took many pathways and read many things and did many different other things, and chose a path which works for me and gave me a God of my understanding, and also helped me to start to do the work that needed to be done on me. Because I felt that if I wasn't the best I could be, then there was no way in hell I'd ever be comfortable in my own. And so I started to do a lot of work on making amends, repairing damage, serving the fellowship in Narcotics Anonymous, doing everything I knew how to do to make me into the kind of person I wanted to become. And I was asked to speak at a convention in Calgary, Alberta, Canada in 2007. And I had been asked, I had spoken there in 1992. And I got this phone call from this guy with a Canadian accent saying, you know who I am? And I said, no idea. I know you're Canadian. That's about it. And he said, well, I was the program chair 15 years ago in Calgary when we had you there. And we've changed a lot in Calgary, and we want to see if you have. So will you come back? So I came back in 2007. And got to share at that convention, and in Canada they have a tradition of billeting you if you're a speaker, and you get to stay with someone who volunteers from the local fellowship. Well, the guy I stayed with was a real great guy. And he asked me to sponsor him by the time the week was out. And I have been sponsoring him again now for the last 12 years. But he also wanted me to keep coming to the conventions in Calgary. So I made an effort to do that. And 4 years later, this person who had been the program chair had become a transsexual and had the surgical operation and everything. And he was now she, and she was in her 60s and had the courage to do all this stuff at that point in her life, and was someone that the fellowship in Calgary, some of them had a very difficult time supporting this kind of change. But when I saw her and came to give her a hug in 2011, there was this young lady standing next to her who had been very, very supportive. And I gave her a hug and something really strange happened. Now, understand, I just had this discussion with God before I left for that convention saying, I'm really, really grateful for all the opportunities you give me. I really don't need to be in a relationship. I have all the loving people I need around me. And so thank you, thank you, thank you. And I hug this woman and I'm saying to myself, I thought we had this discussion, God, what the hell are you doing? And basically I felt safe in her arms for the first time in probably, I don't know, 20 something years that I really felt safe in a woman's arms. And the chemistry was just, it was there. I mean, I could feel her walk into a room with my back turned to the door. And I'm freaking out completely because she's much younger than I am. She only had 4+ years clean at that point. She wasn't an American. She was Canadian. She lived 4,000 miles away. And I'm saying to God, what the hell are you doing? There's no way this works. And it's like, you know, I can see him still laughing at me for all those things. But I was 69 years old at that point. And I'm sitting there going, you know, what the hell is this all about? But just put one foot in front of the other. And we've been married now for 7 years. She's the nicest person I've ever met. I trust her completely. I don't know what I did to deserve her, but I certainly hope I continue to do what I was doing when I got there so that I continue to deserve her. She's a true blessing in my life and an absolute gift of recovery. And I truly believe I am a message of hope for those people who don't think there's room for a relationship in their lives. I was single in Narcotics Anonymous for 27 years between my marriage that failed and this marriage which won't, at least as of today. And I'm here to tell you that service has been an amazing gift that's been given to me. They tell me that what you give in service, you get back tenfold. And my belief is that's about 1,000 times short. I get back at least 10,000 times what I give to this fellowship. And I am grateful for all of the gifts that have been given to me. I've been grateful for all the people that have been put in my life to help show me the way. I am truly grateful for the love I continue to feel from this fellowship. And I'm grateful for the opportunity you all have given me to continue to serve. And I thank you all very much for the opportunity in this or evening. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.